project that was funded as part of a larger study by the National Institutes of Health and also the National Institute for Human Genome Research. And the intent of the project was to do community assessment education around the ethical, legal, and social implications of toxicogenomics research. I am a environmental health researcher, and for years have been studying exposures and health outcomes, and primarily, very frequently, use the CBPR model. Well, if you know community-based participatory research theories and models, the research needs to be of local relevance to your community. And so as the science in environmental health has evolved, where genetics is more expected in terms of the whole paradigm of exposure and health outcomes, I was faced with a dilemma of does this have any local relevance to the communities that I'm studying? So that's how I was able to get this award and the work that we're doing in this area. So these are the objectives of my paper. Basically, I'm going to talk a little bit about trends in toxicogenomics, but I'm going to give you some data that we have on comparing perspectives of scientists and community advocacy groups on this dilemma, and suggest some culturally appropriate methods of doing genetic research with vulnerable working populations. If you read the literature at all in terms of in area of environmental and occupational health, the number of genetic studies is increasing dramatically. It's very much a part of the exposure disease question. How do we incorporate these methods, though, in our research study? So the ethical concern, at least with the populations that I work with, the area of individual consent isn't always will be the cornerstone of ethical research. But when you deal with workers who don't understand genetics, how do you engage the community in consultation and consent around this area? And what we designed, we worked for a number of years trying to get community feedback around the whole issue of genetic research in occupational settings, and decided to use a case study situation. And we chose to focus on the PON1 gene, which is a gene that the peroxidase is an enzyme, a liver and plasma enzyme that plays a significant role in the metabolism of several organophosphate pesticides. And if you have the genetic trait where you are a low metabolizer, it is felt that you're at increased risk of the toxic effects of this exposure to this chemical. And so those of us who do pesticide-related research, the PON1 gene is being very frequently incorporated into research protocols. I did a literature search for the last 5 years with a search with PON1 and pesticides, and there's have been 125 publications in the scientific literature. So clearly the scientists are moving in that direction. This was a qualitative study. It was very exploratory. We wanted to compare and contrast the different views of scientists and farm worker advocates. So we did a review of the literature of the scientists who were publishing in the area of pesticides and farm workers, and randomly selected 8 scientists to participate in the study. A lot of these scientists are from the same research team, so we avoided duplication so that we only interviewed one individual from our research team. And then we had a list of farm worker advocacy groups from the Farm Worker Justice Fund that we randomly selected a small sample of individuals to give us their perspectives on this problem. We asked what experience they had had with doing research around pesticide exposures. Were they familiar with the PON1 gene? And we talked to them about their process of obtaining informed consent, the benefits and risk of knowing the results of genetic studies, and community representation as they, who represents the community, who speaks for the community in terms of interpreting the any local relevance of genetic studies to the community. So the advocates were concerned very clearly about the vulnerability of the population. Research is a foreign concept to the majority of the workers. Majority of the workers will trust community advocacy groups. The community advocacy group understands a research purpose and the procedures. They can help researchers gain access to that community. And the advocate groups presented several different models on how to how they engage communities in working with researchers. Sometimes they directly invite workers to sit down and meet with the researchers at the table discussing these things. Other times, the model they use is to train outreach workers to deliver the message. In other words, the researcher never really directly interacts with the research subjects. It's a liaison community worker to interpret it. There's the third model, which is more of the community-based participatory research model, in which the community members become part of the project. They are considered investigators on the team. And so there are many different ways you can step into this type of research with vulnerable populations. The literacy level of workers and their ability to understand the genetic concepts was a very prevalent theme. Particularly, a couple of the advocacy groups wanted to talk about indigenous workers, and these are farm workers who come from Central America and Mexico, but but Spanish nor English is their primary language. They speak one of 60 dialects, indigenous languages. And in a recent study in Oregon, 40% of the workforce did not speak Spanish or English as their primary language. And so the farm worker advocacy groups really wanted to talk about the needs of this special group of farm workers. Only half of the advocacy groups were aware of emerging genetic research. And only one knew specifically the PON1 gene. But a recurrent question is, what is the benefit to the community? What is the relevance to the community? Will this information be used to protect workers, or will it be used to discriminate against workers? And this is a question we really can't answer nor predict at this point in time, because from the research side, it's still very exploratory in terms of looking at associations between health effects and the PON1 gene. So, there's not a lot of answers to give at this point in time. So the issue specifically to the community was unclear benefit. And if you're working with vulnerable workers, it's a very frequent theme. If you want to access a vulnerable population, if you want to recruit these workers, what is the benefit to the workers? I was in a session this morning where they described the research scientists as mosquitoes. They swoop in during the summer and draw blood, and they swoop away. And advocacy groups for vulnerable workers really don't support that model. It's very tricky with eugenics. It assumes that the workers have job choices, which is not the case in reality. And they have no insurance. If they found that they had a gene where they couldn't metabolize pesticides, there really wouldn't be anything they could do about it anyway. Informed consent, language is a major barrier. There's concerns regarding the community's abilities to understand the research, and that communities are distrustful of scientists, but trustful of healthcare providers. Advocacy groups talked a lot about the need for community consent, but also recognizing that leaders of community organizations don't necessarily speak for the community. Strikingly little was mentioned by the researchers about community consent. This is a very distinct difference. So I want to tell you a little bit about what the researchers said. They, too, said there's limited knowledge of genetics. Most of the people aren't aware of what's going on. One researcher revealed that his consent document is stated in broad terms so the researchers could do tests when they needed to. They did recognize that there's a possibility of the genetic research having little benefit, and they were conscientious around the individual consent forms and the ability for subjects to understand, or research participants to understand, the procedures, steps that they were being asked. The researchers that we talked with emphasized shared responsibility, trust, and respect. They are collaborating with community groups or health provider groups, that the researchers cannot do this alone, and that community leaders can be mistrustful of researchers. I think researchers know that. And they are beginning to respect the community's expertise. So in this very preliminary study, there was no real consensus on either the benefits or the risk of incorporating genetic measures. No clear benefit or path that incorporating genetic markers, what it would take, how it would benefit the community. And for those of us who are doing the PON1 research, I think we have to think in terms of this, is this just a scientific question that's interesting to the researchers in the laboratory, but has no relevance whatsoever to the community? And clearly, more research is needed on the whole concept of individual versus community consent. Thank you.